Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Joy Harris. Joy is a seasoned entrepreneur with an extensive track record of establishing, developing, and transitioning businesses, both independently and collaboratively. With a career enriched by diverse experiences across the entrepreneurial landscape, Joy has garnered invaluable insights into the keys to business success. In her speaking engagements, she targets business owners facing the challenges of overwhelm and burnout, as well as second-generation proprietors struggling to find their zeal within the family enterprise. Through a dynamic mix of humor, candid discourse, and practical advice, Joy empowers her audience to emerge refreshed, equipped with strategies to invigorate their operations. Earlier in her business career, she lost her son Darian when she was 7.5 months pregnant. She wrote a book and a journal to share her journey to help others navigate this loss. Joy hopes to bring awareness around this loss so people can talk about it more. And with that, Joy, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It's an absolute pleasure having you on today.
Thanks for having me, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here and be able to share this with your audience. So thank you for having the ability for us to be able to share these kind of stories with other people.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And I need to share that Joy is an upstate New York transplant. You're originally from Chittenango, which from Whitesboro, where I live, is about probably a half hour away from me. Yep. We met through, I think, a podcast guest forum where you reached out to me. One thing led to another. We had a pre-chat, and here we are today. And originally, we were supposed to record this on Friday, September 27th, but that was right in the middle of Hurricane Helene. Yep. Your power went out, so we had to reschedule for actually recording on Monday, September 30th. And I wanted to ask you before we get going, I know you told me before we started recording that you're okay and the residents are okay where you are.
I'm in a small town called Esland. It's outside of Chapel Hill, North Carolina. We're kind of central to the central north of the state.
And I also understand that there's been a lot of widespread devastation throughout your state, particularly I saw in Asheville, where Hurricane Helene left its mark, and also in Charlotte, apparently, the flooding is continuing and there's no let up. So, yeah. Have you heard from any friends or family members that you know of in those areas? Are they safe?
Yeah. So prayers, first of all, for our whole western part of our state and mountains areas, Asheville, Black Mountain, Charlotte, all those areas were mostly the mountain areas got devastated worse. They've lost so much. We've had over 100 losses of lives. We've lost homes and communities that were completely wiped out by the flooding. And there's some people that are still stuck on Black Mountain because the bridges were wiped out. They can't get off. So they're going to have to try to go in with helicopters to airlift these people out. I know I've seen they were sending pack mules and horses in with supplies to get to the people that can't get out. I've seen people sending drones with medication to people that can't get out. We are all trying to load up trucks of different products, you know, water and clothes and soaps, all the things that they need, and get them shipped over to them as quickly as possible. And it's going to be a long recovery for that area because they're not in a flood zone. I mean, nobody was expecting this at all. And so I do have friends that I've heard from that are safe and are okay. I know our colleges have shut down. A lot of the kids didn't have a place to go because they weren't local. So there's some kids that are still there. So we pray for their families and for them that they're going to be safe and taken care of. I do know that they opened up the cafeteria at one of the colleges so that they're actually going to be able to at least be fed and taken care of. So if people can just send their, you know, finances if they can, their prayers are always needed to our Western state. And there's a rumor that there's a possible another storm hurricane coming to North Carolina between the 3rd and the 10th of October. So we're praying that we get that gets moved off or gets blown away and doesn't come on land anywhere.
And I would echo those prayers that you don't get another major weather event on top of Hurricane Helene. And I would also echo that my thoughts and prayers are with everybody in Western North Carolina, that I hope there's no more loss of life, no more additional devastation, and that the recovery efforts go smoothly and quickly as they can under the circumstances.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So one of the things we talked about at pre-chat was basically we wanted to focus primarily on your book, what motivated you to write the book and what you hope people take away from that. So that's where our focus is going to be. So we might as well get right down to it. What do you think?
Let's do it.
All right. So first of all, please tell our listeners about your book, Missed Baby Steps, Life Without First. And what inspired you to write such a personal story?
Thanks, Dave. So I was inspired to write my story about the loss of my son because I realized for all these years that I was supposed to do something with his loss. I remember when it happened, I was mad. I was mad at God. How could you take my baby? What did I do? The guilt. Did I do something to cause this to happen? All these different things go through your mind. And then there was that next day where I was like, I'm supposed to do something with this, but I didn't know what that was. It took 20 years later before I was like, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to share my story and my experience with others so that somebody has a resource, because the resources for me were very stale. They were, and they were not other people's stories. So I felt like I was alone in this, and I clearly was not the only person that this ever happened to, because sadly, over 26,000 babies a year die in utero. Were shortly after they're born. And what happens is they call it a silent birth because there's no crying. The baby doesn't cry. And it becomes a silent birth in many, many ways because people don't talk about it because they're like, they don't know what to say. The parents don't know how to deal with this. It's not the norm. It's not what's supposed to happen. So I wanted to bring some awareness around it so people would talk about it. Because it is something that happens. That baby was real. That baby was mine. I lost him. And I felt like I was very blessed because my family and friends allowed me to talk about him. Like I wasn't, there she goes, talking about that dead baby again kind of concept. I was able to talk about him then he was real because he was real. And that I had emotions and things that went with that. And so when I never thought about myself to become an author because I don't read and retain well. So books for me are difficult. So I never thought I would write a book. But God said, nope, you're going to write this book. I wrote the book. And then I decided, oh, we need a journal with it because I didn't have a journal or a way to write my story. I did it from memory. And so I wanted people to just have this tool that they could use to navigate through this loss. And I was able to actually just recently, sadly also, a young lady in my community that I knew had a miscarriage. So I brought her a copy of my book and journal, dropped it off on her front porch to give her a resource to navigate through that loss. Because there's no stage that is not devastating. When you're expecting to have this baby, whether it's 6 months, 6 weeks, I had friends that were 3 days before their due date that lost babies. It just tears a piece of your heart out that you never get back.
Yeah, and I think any type of loss that alters the natural course of the universe just tears our heart out. And any loss where the relationship, I think, has also been very significant as well. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions about miscarriage and stillborn loss or newborn loss. I tell my students this at Utica University, is a lot of individuals will perceive this as being a lost pregnancy as opposed to losing a child. And a lot of times individuals will say, well, you can have another child. Well, it's a lot of, which is one of the worst things you can say. And maybe they can't. Maybe they pulled out all the stops this time because this might have been their only shot to have a child. And they couldn't have it. So to say that pretty much does two things. One is assumes that a person can just reproduce at will.
Yeah.
Secondly, it really undermines the fact that the what you lost or who you lost as a child.
Well, and you're bonded.
Yeah, you're bonded. Yeah, I mean, my wife told me, and we had three children, and she told me, she goes, every time I found out I was pregnant, that child became mine. You know, and you would play, you know, I know mothers that would play music in the womb for the child, that would talk to their child. That's your child in utero.
Right. And you you create dreams and a life around the future of this child. That's why it's life without first, because you don't get the first cry, the first walk, the first crawl, the first food, none of the things that you would be able to do.
Yep. And a lot of what I've understood, Joy, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that individuals, families who have experienced the death of a child due to a miscarriage or newborn loss, their memories are created by watching the milestones of other families who conceived and had children around the same time. So when they see their friend's five-year-old child start in kindergarten, they're thinking, that could have been my child.
Oh, yeah.
That could have been Darian. That could have been Rose, whatever the name was given to the child. You know, so, and those memories get created by watching other people's milestones, and that makes that grief journey. It isn't linear for sure in any event, but it makes that specific grief journey more circular than a lot of people realize.
It does, because it's not a moment where, okay, I lost this baby. You mourn the process, and then that's it. He's still with me. I think about him every day. There's not a day that doesn't go by where I don't have those thoughts. I wonder what he would be like right now, because he would have been 22, mm-hmm. right? So what would he have been like as a 22-year-old? Or, you know, would he be getting married, going to college? What would he have done for a career? All the things, and throughout this different ages, you know, I mean, his birthday still comes and goes, and we celebrate it in our own way, because it was an important day. Mm-hmm. Just because he's not here physically, he's still here with us, spirit. And so we still have him as part of our family.
How hard of a book was this to write for you?
Honestly, it really wasn't that hard. A lot of people have asked me that, like, was this really hard for you? Was it very emotional? And I think because it's been so long, it wasn't hard. And it was more important for me to share it and get it out. Like, he's now part of the future forever. He may not have been able to be here to, you know, create something or do something spectacular, but he's in this book that will live on forever. So his story is part of the world, which I thought was really pretty cool, right? I mean, my two girls that I do have jobs and have stories and have lives and all these things. So I've given him a voice to help share his story with other people.
And I think that's important. And I'm sure you've given your two daughters a voice too, as well as to, and also have shared, you know, the course of your pregnancy, you know, the trials, the tribulations, and the ups and downs. And I'm sure it was important for you to make Darian a part of Kira's, and I don't forget your other daughter's name, but
Kira and Kylie.
Mm-hmm. Kira and Kylie, yes, to make Darian a part of Kira and Kylie's history. And that's so important, particularly if siblings find out that they had a brother or sister that had died of a, you know, miscarriage or newborn loss, and the parents thought the best thing to do would be to protect them by not telling them, when, as it turns out, it ends up being the worst thing that could possibly happen, because the kids may feel cheated out of the fact that they didn't get to know that part of your life and that part of their history. So I think the fact that you wrote about Darian, you wrote about your pregnancy, your the course of your pregnancy, the aftermath, I think is going to be an important legacy to leave, not only for Kylie and Kira, but for the rest of the world as well too.
Yeah. Thank you, because that is the goal. And actually, I was at my mom did not want me to have my daughter come to the hospital after we had him. And I said, no, she knew and understood that I was pregnant. She was excited about having a baby. We didn't know at the time what he was. But I said, I can at least take her to therapy, but I can't bring back this opportunity. We can work through the emotions, but we cannot bring him back for her this to have this one blip in time to say goodbye mm-hmm. to her brother.
Can you tell me how you and your ex-husband, Randy, decided on the name Darian for your baby. So it's, first of all, it's a very, not a common name.
No.
And it's very unique. And so that kind of struck me as, how did you come up with that specific name?
So my ex liked to watch a lot of different TV shows, and one of his favorite ones was called Time Tracks. And it was about this guy that was a time traveler, and his name was Darian Lambert. And so when we were looking and talking about names, and I heard that one, I said, well, what do you think about that name? And he's like, what name? I said, Darian. And he's like, I like it. So that was it.
That wasn't the time machine by any chance, was it?
No, it was called Time Tracks.
Time Tracks. Okay. Because I remember when I was a child watching the Time Tunnel or Time Machine or something to that effect. And it was one of my favorite movies because I could get lost in the fantasy of just watching these guys go back in time and try to change history. So,
yeah.
And I know sometimes I hear a lot of parents say, if I could only go back in time, I might have done things differently. But, you know, the way I look at it, Joy, is that we all did the best that we could given the circumstances that were dealt with us. And looking at the past, other than learning from the past rather than staring at it, is going to be the key to getting through grief.
Oh, 100%.
It's going to be a key.
And it was funny because talking about the name, the nurse even said, well, did you have a name picked out for it? And we said, well, we did, but we don't want to use it if we can have a live baby. And she says, no, you should give that to him because this was his name. Yep. And so we did. And I'm grateful we did because we didn't have another boy. So it would have gone lost.
And also by giving a name to your child speaks of the significance of his life, regardless of how short it was.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the fact that there's a history behind that name, there's a story behind that name. And that will keep him alive as long as you tell that story and others as well, too.
Yep, definitely.
So what do you want the audience to know about the topic of miscarriage and stillborn loss, Joy?
So the big thing is that the people who are going through it don't want to feel invisible. They don't want to feel like it wasn't important or it wasn't validated, because we will sit here and we will say happy birthday to somebody who has been gone for 10 or 20 years, but we're on Facebook saying, you know, happy heavenly birthday, but we're not talking about these other babies and these lives. And we're not talking to the parents and just saying, feel free if you want to talk about your baby. I'm here to just listen. Just being able to be there to listen to somebody talk about the emotion or their experience or their journey or their delivery and how things went, it brings some sort of a normalization around it that it was truly, because I had to go through delivering him. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like he magically was removed from me. And what was that like? It was still an experience,
yeah.
Right? We still talk about our, you know, moms look together and talk about their deliveries and their pregnancies and all the things. Well, then let's give that space to these moms, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly as part of the pregnancy, they're doing clothes shopping, especially if they know the sex of the child. They're picking out, you know, wallpaper patterns, or paying for the room. All of this is part of that whole journey from conception to birth. And that's also, I think, an important part of the story that they weave, that they tell. It's an important part of the narrative because, you know, particularly, you know, if they see a specific color that was associated with the nursery that they hope to have, that could also be a trigger for intense pain as well, too.
Yeah. And it's, I call it the life without first, because I've always heard like the first year after any death is the hardest because you have to get through all the seasons and the holidays and the different things. And then after about a year, for some reason, it feels like the pain subsides some. It never goes away. There's still not moments that I won't hear the song. There's a song about this, a country song where he's talking about taking his kid out and his kid learning all these bad habits from him. And I always, when I used to hear that, I would just start bawling. I can now hear the whole song, my boy being without losing my, you know, total emotional thing and being able to be like, yeah, but I also got a lot from him. I wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation with you had I not lost him to write his story. So there's a lot of things that can still happen that are good if we allow those things in and don't just hold on to the pain and the hurt.
Exactly. And I tell my students this all the time. We never have any control over the challenges that are going to find us in life. The only thing we have control over is how we respond to those challenges. because if you live long enough, you're not going to get through this life unscathed. You're going to experience loss. You're going to experience other events that are going to cause you to take pause of what you believe, what your priorities are. Just understand that that's a part of our growth process, and how you respond to that will determine the quality of your life.
Yep. Yep. And then that we have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So if we don't deal with the pain of the loss, whatever it is, then it does other things to us that we don't even realize.
Yeah, particularly pain that doesn't have the opportunity to be expressed or is suppressed can result in all kinds of physical issues, emotional issues. And pain's going to come. We can try to outrun it. We can try to suppress it, but it's going to be looking at us and saying, I'm here. So either you got a choice. You can either run from me or deal with me. And guaranteed, if you deal with me, we're going to get through this together.
And I think by sharing the story and writing it for people, and they'll talk to other women about it, it's like anything else. Now they have a piece of information that when they find out or hear about somebody else, they can share and say, or connect, right? We connect people for good things. Well, we should connect them for these other things so that they have a resource to go to somebody to talk about who can relate to.
Exactly. And, you know, we can build bridges with individuals who have had, you know, shared experiences and realize that we're not alone. I know that after my daughter, Janine, and I call it transition to a new existence over 21 years ago. I know the first time I walked into a parental support group, there were 18 other individuals there to launch a child. And I realized then that, boy, I'm not alone. I said, I wish we didn't have to go through the pain of losing a child, but we're doing it together. And we soon learned that our shared pain could become a gateway to hope. And it was better dealing with our pain collectively with a group that understood than trying to deal with it by ourselves.
100%.
Can you speak to the trauma and challenges that families face as a result of silent births?
Sure. So I think the traumas are different for everybody in the family. For me, the trauma was the worst part of my trauma was while I was delivering my stillborn baby, my doctor was complaining about the amniotic fluid, you know, splashing on her new sneakers. And all I could think of is I'm laying here delivering a dead baby and you're worried about amniotic fluid on your sneakers. I wanted to just be like, piss off. Like, are you kidding me? And I didn't have any emotional abilities to say anything. I was in such shock that I was even in this position. It was like kind of like a out-of-body experience. Like, this can't be happening to me. This can't be real. Am I really here? You know, all the things that you're doing as you're going through that process. And the traumas create gaps in the family, whether you want them to or not. And our nurse, I remember I was blessed. I had the same nurse for all three of my deliveries. And she said, be prepared, because a lot of families, marriages don't survive this. They divorce because it puts this silent wedge into your relationship. And while we divorced, it wasn't the main cause of our divorce, but it does become the main divorce cause for a lot of families who go through stillborns because of guilt, because of, you know, the emotion that you're going through and you can't express, or he just thinks you should get over it and you can't, and or the opposite. There's just a lot of things that are attached to stillborn deaths that sadly, until you go through it, you can't understand it, which is a lot of times in any traumas. But if you can at least find somebody that you can talk to that can relate to what you're going through and you can get it out, I think it definitely helps make the trauma not so bad.
Yeah, I think what we can express, the fear tends to dissipate or become more manageable. And I think, you know, once we express that trauma, we're supported either through listening by somebody else who's willing to give us that listening ear or understands. I think that makes the trauma easier to manage. We become more empowered to find our calling and reestablish ourselves in life with meaning and with purpose following traumatic events. So But thank you for that. Thank you for sharing that, because as I was reading your story, I couldn't imagine being a woman knowing that I was going to be delivering a child that was going to be dead at birth.
Yeah.
And to know that for a month and a half or so prior to delivery.
I didn't know it that far in advance.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I knew it delivered in 2 days later. You wouldn't. There was a time not that long ago where they let women stay pregnant and the body would just naturally finally go into delivery when it realized that the baby had passed. Mm-hmm. But that baby starts to break down inside there. And so it becomes toxic to the woman. So that's why you would not want to leave it in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I apologize for
it's
that.
Okay.
I was thinking of you were 7.5 months pregnant. So that's why I did the math the way I did it.
So. No, that's okay.
All right. For my listeners, this will be the only mistake I make during this podcast. Well, I can't say for future podcasts or what'll happen, but for this one, this will be the only mistake I make. So
it's okay.
I also loved in the book how you included chapters from your mom, your ex-husband Randy, and your daughter Kira.
Okay.
From your perspective, why was it important to include their thoughts in the book?
Well, because it didn't just happen to me, right? I was the mom delivering, but it affected all of them. My mom had come up to be with me and take care of my daughter when we were going through the process. My daughter was going to have a brother that she wasn't going to have, and my ex-husband had a different perception than I did. And interesting, I remember when I asked him if he wanted to write a chapter, and he's like, I will, but I want you to not be upset with it because it may not be what you think. Mm-hmm. I said, fair enough. I said, no judgment here. I just want you to have, if you want to have your side of the story in the book, then I would welcome you to write a chapter. And for him, I think it was because sometimes men are not as bonded with their children in the womb because it's not the same experience as it is for a woman. And so for him, that's what it was, is he didn't have the same bond that I did because I grew this in my inside and he did not. But I appreciated that he was willing to be honest and vulnerable about that, so that it gave fathers an opportunity to understand and relate and feel like, well, why is she not just getting over this, right? Or why is she going through all these things? Because he can't relate.
Mm-hmm. And Kira, I thought Kira's account was particularly poignant,
yeah,
touching. I, as I recall, she saw herself as Darian's protector.
Yeah.
And
she was only 4.
How old is Kira now?
She's 27.
27. You still talk about that the experience of her writing.
We do still talk. Yeah, we do talk about him some, not so much the writing part. I know for her, it was all the things that she didn't get to have with a brother because she really, really wanted a brother. And so, you know, when I had a sister and not a brother afterwards, she was still mad about that. She has written, there was times when she was growing up, she would write letters and put it on his box because we had him cremated, so he was on our shelf. And so she would write little letters to him, which I kept, and all the things, and, you know, talk about it. And I think the funny part of the story was her, after Darian died and goldfish died, and what do you do with the goldfish? You flush them down the toilet, and we're standing there around the toilet going to flush the goldfish, and she looks at me as serious as can be, and she's like, is that what you did with my brother? Dang, let me tell you what, I had all I could do to not bust a gut laughing and also be like, oh my gosh, no. And then I had to explain to her what we did with her brother because she's a child.
Well, and kids have this innocence about them. They're just good. They have no filter. They're going to ask what's on their mind.
No.
But I was particularly moved by her account because a lot of times sibling grief gets overlooked because everybody's so concerned about the parents.
Yeah.
And siblings will sometimes feel that their grief is disenfranchised because nobody's asking them about how they're feeling about the loss of their brother or sister. And especially when you look at older siblings who have transitioned, I ask my students, how many of you have told your brothers and sisters stuff you'd never tell your parents? Everybody raises their hand. So they lose a confidant. They lose a very special part of the relationship where they can share secrets and feel safe. So now it's like, where do I go from here? So I always tell anybody that's willing to listen, honor the siblings, their loss is just as significant. Don't sweep them under the rug. Make sure that they have a voice for their grief as well.
Even if they're young and you don't think they understood, our kids know way more than we give them credit for. Like they are very observant to what's going on. They may not be saying it, but they're hearing it and absorbing it, good or bad.
Well, they're going to react as our caregivers act. And if our caregivers are stressed, they're going to react. They're going to mimic that.
Yeah.
And so that's something that we also need to be aware of, I think, is to try to create as much structure and as much normalcy as we can amidst the chaos that occurs after a loss.
Yeah.
What do you want the audience to know about this topic? What do you want them to take away from your book about the topic?
I want people to be willing to talk about it. I want them to be able to reach out to somebody they know that's lost a baby, whether it's been 1 month, 1 year, 10 years, and just say, hey, I was thinking about you. I heard about this woman who lost her son in utero and wrote a story about it. And I just want to know if you ever want to talk about it. I would love to hear how you're feeling about it now, because I understand now that it's not something that just goes away. And if you ever want to talk about it, like, just be there to listen. Like, listening in any situation can be one of the most gifted things you can do for somebody, no matter what.
And I think that tends to get overlooked because we have been impressed upon us from day one that we have to find solutions to problems. And quite frankly, Joy, there's no solution to death. There's no solution to the physical absence of a loved one.
No.
So essentially what we can do is listen, listen to the individual story manifest so that we can help. They can make sense out of what's happened to them. They can come to some form of acceptance that will allow them to move forward in the world, knowing that their life has permanently changed. And when I say acceptance, I don't mean closure. It's just, this is my life the way it is, and I'm willing to make the most of it in spite of the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just creating space for that, creating a safe space for that story to unfold. And try not to say anything that's going to be interpreted as being insensitive.
Right. And definitely don't say you can have another one. The worst thing you can say. And what I really want somebody to say to me is, this really freaking sucks.
Yeah,
you didn't deserve this. Or just, you know, the real feelings, how people really feel about it. I mean, really, people do feel bad that this happened to somebody, but that's not what they tell them.
And, you know, I think sometimes, Joy, you know, I'd say in a lot of cases, people don't mean to be insensitive. They just don't know what to say. They've
right.
heard that these are the things that you say to provide comfort. Well, in reality, they undermine the significance of the loss.
Yeah.
But if they're told this is what's acceptable, unless we or other grief educators educate them on this is not what you say.
Yeah.
They're going to say it. And as long as it's said with some kind of sincerity and feeling and concern, I'm thinking, well, I can let that pass, but, you know, it's still going to hurt. I mean, saying that you could have another child undermines the fact that you lost Darian.
Yeah.
And undermines
that
your
I wanted him.
That you wanted him.
Right. You know, I have a problem personally. This isn't me personally, audience. So don't get all mad when I say this. I don't know when or where the term rainbow baby came from for babies born after a stillbirth or a loss. And I was like, no, because to me, that's like you're replacing something. And I never used that term when I was pregnant with my younger daughter who came after him, because that was not how I personally felt. I was like, you know, we even tried for another baby after that, which we weren't successful for. But I wanted her to know, no, I intended to have you regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to do with replacing anything.
Yeah, and one of the things that I am very conscious of is my verbiage that I use with the family who's experienced the death of a loved one.
Mm-hmm.
First, I will try to understand what their vocabulary is for death and try to help them come to the terms of the reality of death using their vocabulary. I may suggest other ways to look at the end-of-life moment once they're in a position to hear some other perspectives, but I go with the flow. I don't assume anything. I'm not going to say to somebody whose loved one died of a terminal illness, well, at least your loved one's not suffering anymore. Because one, I'm not going to assume that that's how they felt. Now, if they say that, well, at least my child isn't suffering anymore, my loved one isn't suffering, then I can acknowledge it from that standpoint. But I never go where an individual or family isn't willing to lead me. And I'm certainly not going to lead them where they're not willing to go.
Yeah.
So it's just, It's just kind of like walking on the path beside them, and they're going to lead you. They're going to tell you what they want to talk about, what's on their mind. And all we have to do is, if we establish ourselves as listeners, we can be present for the doors that they're going to open. If we don't, and we're too busy offering solutions, we're not going to see the door that's right in front of our nose.
Yeah, well said.
Well, thank you. What has been the response of the book and journal to those who have read it? I know I haven't read your journal, but I love the book. I thought it was just it was a great combination of your memoir of your pregnancy with Darian, the birth and the aftermath, and also some very good practical suggestions at the end of each chapter.
Thank you. It's been really well received by the people who read it. Just like you said, it was an easy read. There was a couple of people that cried. One of my friends who's an OB nurse had her nurses and her doctor read it, and they saw it from a different point of view than I think they had ever thought about that process before, because they are on the medical side. So they try to take the emotion out, because otherwise they could be very sad a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And my old boss, who I worked for at the time, I lost him, said, "Well, where's number two? I want to read the second book." And I was like, "There's no second book. I don't know what the second book would be, but thank you for thinking you want to read more from me." I thought that was very flattering. So I like that it was an easy read. I think it covers the basis of what the journey is like to go through it, from pregnancy to loss, and then from the family's point of view. And I think it's a book that I want people to give to people who lose a baby. Go on Amazon and order it and send it to them as a gift. The journal is a simple journal. It's repetitive, basically, for them to have a prompt to say, "How are you feeling today?" Right? Like, share your, this could become your story for your children to read later, or somebody else that you could just give, "Here's what my experience was." Sometimes it's just nice to know you're not the only one, even though you really know you're not. It's nice to hear somebody else's story and be like, "Oh, they felt like this too. I'm not crazy." Like, your brain does some weird stuff during death. I mean, I really believe people could look at me and be like, "Oh, she lost that baby."
Mm-hmm.
Now we know that's not true, but that's what my brain thought.
Well, and grief just affects us physically, emotionally, socially, psychologically. Mm-hmm. I know that after my daughter's transition, I walked into a grocery store and I was looking at everybody just smiling, having fun, and I'm thinking to myself, what world did I just drop into?
Right.
It was like, you know, does anybody know what's going on in my world? And it was just, and at the time, as I look back, it sounded egocentric, but it was just an expression of my own pain, of feeling so disconnected from everything, that the world that I once knew as being safe, as familiar, became a terrifying place for me to live.
Yeah.
Because of what happened.
Yeah. And I think that's true with so many things is that when we see somebody who we may or may not know what they're going through, usually if they're angry, they're hurt, they're acting out, whether it's in the grocery store screaming at somebody, is really they're at their last point. And what that person really needs is somebody to just touch them on the shoulder and be like, "Are you okay?"
Mm-hmm.
Right? Instead, what we do is be like, "Oh, what's going on over there?" And we turn and go the other way. And those people are really crying out because they're at their last wit. They either don't have a resource, they may not even realize that that's what's creating it. Because I know there was times where I was like, I felt out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because it was the repeat of all the emotions that came with it and other things that came after it. And it's like, I didn't know what to do with them. I didn't know how to deal with them. It was a lot of processing and growing through something. And I think that's important for people to know, is that you have to go through the loss,
mm-hmm,
and feel the emotions and talk about them in order for you to get to the other side and be reflective and say, "I survived," mm-hmm, and let it go on.
And you know, Joy, for me, when I learned how to do that, in some strange way, grief became an ally for me. And my emotional pain became an ally for me, because my pain taught me that I could sit with it, that even in my worst moments, I could find something to be grateful for that day.
Yep.
Or that my sadness and pain morphed into compassion, and compassion for people that grew outside of individuals that I knew. and transcended to people that I didn't know. Yeah. I mean, what we do make, you know, leaves a lasting impact. So you're right. If you see somebody that's hurting, go over and just see if they're okay. Love is kind of the way that we can help individuals, you know, work through their worst pain.
Yeah, exactly. And then one, the funny thing too, was some people were, I think I had a friend who just had a baby, and I think at first she was not sure, because I opened a daycare afterwards and made a lot of changes in my life. She's like, are you sure you're going to be okay with having, you know, my baby? Because he was 3 months older than Darian would have been at the time. And I said, yeah, I said, actually, it would be healing for me to be able to at least fill my arms with somebody's baby. Right. Don't think that that mom who lost a baby doesn't want to hold your baby, because they do.
Well, you know, the way I look at it is that the love you have for Darian, the love you have for Kira and Kylie, well, the love that you have for your children are going to spill over to the love of all for all children.
Sure.
And
some people might not be able to handle it, but I know for me, like I wouldn't, I was sadder if somebody didn't say, would you like to hold him?
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't know, again, what to say. So you can at least offer.
Mm-hmm. And as individuals who are grieving, we need to be empowered to say, now's not the time. I'm not in an emotional place where I can do this. It doesn't mean I won't be later.
Right.
I'm just not now. And it's important for individuals who are trying to support grievers to understand that. That what they could do, they can't do at one part of their grief journey, they may be able to do down the road as they progress and they've developed more coping skills and strategies to manage their grief and have it become more integrated. So patience for those who are grieving, and understand that everybody's going to go at their own pace.
Yep, exactly.
I know you've left us with a lot today regarding, you know, takeaways from your book. If there's one other life lesson or teaching you want to leave our audience with today, Joy, what would that be?
That we're not in control. We're not in control. I used to think I was in control, that I was probably a control freak, but Darian taught me I was not in control, that God is in control, and that it's okay that I'm not in control.
Yeah, it's amazing how much I thought I was in control of everything too. And then the illness with Janine happened, and I realized that I'm not in as much control of everything as I thought I was.
Yep.
If anything, I've learned, the older I've gotten, to learn that there's very little I'm in control of, other than how I conduct myself with others.
Correct.
So I think once we can let go of that illusion of control, we become in control.
We do, and we also become happier.
Yeah, I think I remember for me, it was quite the weight of the world on my shoulders to try to have to control everything. It was tiring.
Very.
And now I sleep better at my understanding that somebody else is in charge, and that I will just go with whatever path the universe or God opens for me. And that's the path I'm walking. So my last question for you, and this has been a great conversation, I want to thank you for being a part of it today. If people want to find out more about your services, find out about your book, what's the best way for them to do that?
Sure. They can go to my website. That's www.missedbabysteps.com. And they can connect with me all through there. There's a link that takes you over to my business page if you're looking for some business coaching or consulting, or you need a fractional COO to come in into your business. So I have the pages that can cross connect. So everything is there. There's a button to connect with me. You can connect with me on Facebook under Joy Graves Harris. I'd be happy to talk to people there. And if anybody out there that's listening that thinks that they want this in their hospital, or I would love to get this into the hands of the doctors, because the information they gave me at the hospital was not really helpful. It was medically correct, maybe, but it wasn't emotionally what I needed at that time. And so I think I want to see this be the gift that they give to their patients, to say, I'm sorry about your loss, but here's a resource that can really help you understand the journey you're on.
And I think it's important for hospitals, healthcare centers, agencies that deal with individuals that have experienced all kinds of trauma, have updated resources and information. I think typically a lack of appropriate resources has been an issue ever since I've been in the human service field in the 80s. So, and hopefully you and everybody else who wants to make a difference in this world can ensure that that's going to happen collectively.
Yeah, agree. Thank you again for having me as a guest on your show. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Joy, for being a guest, and I hope we can have another conversation in the future.
Sounds good.
And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.